Thanks for downloading My Mac Mini Podcast number 9. This week we've got a new Fenestration, a speedy review, Nemo reviews 3 Aperture books, and the debut of Not Mac News with Guy Searle.
Hello, this is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration number 9. For this and the next couple of segments, I'm going to spend some time talking about interoperability between Windows and Mac platforms using certain common applications. Thankfully, Microsoft Office is pretty much binary file compatible with the Windows version, so swapping Excel spreadsheets, Word documents, and PowerPoint files between the two platforms is straightforward if you own Office. Unfortunately, there are some programs you find on Windows that don't have equivalents on the Mac platform, or if they do have equivalents, they're not binary file compatible. The one I'm going to talk about today is Visio. Visio is now an extended member of the Microsoft Office system. By that I mean Visio comes with some versions of Office, but not others. However, it is marketed by Microsoft as an Office product, and has the same look and feel on the Windows platform as the other Office applications. Unfortunately though, Microsoft acquired Visio when they bought the Visio Corporation. The product was developed independently of Microsoft, and was only ever developed for the Windows platform. This means that Microsoft does not have an equivalent product that they can offer with the Macintosh version of Office, and they've never wanted to spend the time to port Visio to the Mac platform. Now, there are plenty of programs on the Mac side that do the same job as Visio, and arguably do it better than Visio does. OmniGraffle is one that immediately comes to mind. The problem is that Visio has a proprietary file format, the .vsd format, and being a Microsoft product, they don't open this file format up for other people to use. As such, there is no drawing product on the Microsoft side that can open a VSD file directly. This creates a certain headache when you want to share Visio files between Macintosh and Windows users. Now, if you just want to share files for viewing between users, what I suggest you do is have your Windows users create PDF versions of their Visio documents. Obviously, on the Macintosh you can readily open, view, and print PDF documents. But that doesn't really help you if you need to amend a Visio document created by a Windows user. Now, you can ask them to save them into a different format. There is a Visio format called VDX, which is a Visio XML format. This is readily opened by all of the drawing products available on the Macintosh platform, so that's a good one to suggest your Windows users can use. There's just one caveat with XML. It's quite large because it's a very descriptive type file rather than a binary file. You can actually open it up and edit it in text mode if you really want to, which means it's not very space efficient. In some testing I did, I took an ordinary VSD document, a Visio file, admittedly a fairly complicated one, but it was a network diagram, so it was typical of the sort of documents you might get to use with Visio. It saved as a 600k file under VSD. When I saved it out as an XML file, it went up to 6 megabytes. Now, an XML file will readily zip, but you need to be aware that when you save out an XML file, you're going to get some big files. Asking for a different file format is all well and good when you're working with a Windows user, and you can have that conversation. But if you receive a file from somebody who's not aware you're going to edit the file on the Mac, or it's a historic Visio diagram that you want to edit, then changing it to a different format on the Visio side is not really going to help you. However, there is a solution to that. ConceptDraw is a Mac program that's very similar to Visio and is quite high-end in terms of its look, reach, and feel. The makers of this software, a Russian company called Odessa Systems, have actually created a webpage that allows you to submit a VSD file to them, and they will convert it for you into a Visio XML file and send it back to you. I did some experimentation with this service and found it was quite reasonable. Your email will send the file to them via a web page, and about 5-10 minutes later it comes back to you in the XML format. When I tested this using the diagram I mentioned to you before, the file I got back from them opened in OmniGraffle and looked pretty much identical to the file I had open in a Windows Visio session I had open in Parallels on the same machine. I did spot a couple of font substitutions, so that's something you might want to be aware of, but in general the document looked pretty much the same as it did in Visio. Interestingly enough, I downloaded a copy of the ConceptDraw trial, while I was on their website. When I tried to open the same XML document up in their ConceptDraw application, it failed to load. So, as with always with these things, your mileage may vary. I'll post a link to the webpage where you can get this conversion service in the show notes. One final thought. Congratulations to Chad and Tim and the rest of the MyMac.com team on reaching 100 podcasts. Pictures of Tim and Guy recording the 100th podcast at the Apple Store are up on the MyMac.com website at the moment. I was amazed to see how similar the Apple Store looks to the one here in the UK that near me in Manchester. I guess that's part of the concept, is to keep them the same wherever you go, but that was quite interesting. Anyway, it looks like the guys had a great time, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the 100th podcast. MyMac.com has been going for quite a long time as a web publication in one form or another, and I think it's great that they've embraced podcasting technology so readily and have already reached 100 shows. Certainly I wouldn't be talking to you now if it wasn't for Tim and Chad and their encouragement and their bandwidth and their ability to put the Mac Mini podcast together. So I thank them for that, and I hope you enjoy the segment too. If you don't, it's all Tim's fault. Thanks very much. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Within the last year, Apple released a software called Aperture, A-P-E-R-T-U-R-E, and it's called the all-in-one post-production tool from Apple for professional digital photographers. Well, four books have been published on Aperture to help you learn how to use it and understand the nooks and crannies of its interface. And we have three of those four books here at MyMac.com. We're making an unusual detour to the sagging shelves section of the Book Bites bin of MyMac.com mini podcasts, Nemos, reviews you can use that won't make you snooze here on our mini podcast number 9. The three books are called Real World Aperture, Industrial Strength Production Techniques. The author is Ben Long, and it's published by Peach Pit Press. The second title, also published by Peach Pit Press, is called Aperture, Apple Pro Training Series, by Orlando Luna and Ben Long, the same Ben Long of the previous book. And the third title is called Aperture Exposed, The Mac Photographer's Guide to Taming the Workflow, published by Cybex, S-Y-B-E-X, which is now owned by Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y. And we will have links to all of these publishers and books and ISBN numbers on our show notes. The first title, by Ben Long, Aperture, Real World Aperture Industrial Strength Production Techniques, is 238 pages. And it's written in a very chatty style. It's got lots of nice numbered steps and colored images and screenshots. But it feels to me like a somewhat introductory approach to a very heavy-duty application. Even though the previous volumes in the Real World series from Peach Pit Press have been really weighty and meaty and very hardcore, this particular title on Aperture is not one that we're going to recommend for the serious photographer who wants to delve deeply into the guts of Aperture. Let's skip to the third title, Aperture Exposed, by Ellen Anon and Josh Anon, published by Cybex. This title is loaded with descriptions, and the page count is 297 pages. By the way, that first book was $35 in the US, Canada 44, and the UK 25 pounds. This one by Cybex, Aperture Exposed, is $30 US, 39 Canadian, and 20 pounds UK. Aperture Exposed is terrific value because it goes through all the different aspects of aperture, and it's very comprehensive in its description. I like this one more than the Real World Aperture. Aperture Exposed is definitely preferable, and it's also lower in price. Right, $5 lower in price. Not surprisingly, we're saving the best for last. Aperture Apple Pro Training Series by Orlando Luna and Ben Long is priced at $50 US, Canadian 67, and United Kingdom 36 pounds, but the page count is 519 pages, and it includes a DVD of the lessons. On the previous titles, you can get the lesson files off the web, but there's nothing like actually having a DVD with the lesson files included. This book is wide and deep. The illustrations are superior, the numbered steps are more extensive, and when you're paying hundreds of dollars for aperture, why would you want to go anything other than top dollar and top quality if you're a pro photographer on your third-party manual? Well, BookBytes rates them accordingly. 3 out of 5 for Real World Aperture from Peach Pit Press. 4 out of 5 for Aperture Exposed from Cybex Press. And a highly rated 5 out of 5, our highest recommendation, for Aperture Apple Pro Training Series by Luna and Long. You will enjoy going through the lessons. You will know just about everything there is to know about aperture, and you will be the envy of your aperturians who haven't taken the time and the money and made the effort to really understand everything you can learn about aperture that you will be able to accomplish with the Aperture Apple Pro Training Series by Orlando Luna and Ben Long. I'll give you the ISBN on this title just in case you only have access to us in audio format. ISBN is 0-321-422-76-7. Thank you so much for listening to the MyMac.com mini podcast number 9, Nemo's Reviews You Can Use That Won't Make You Snooze. And it's not easy to do book reviews in audio format, so we want you to go to the bookstore or talk to somebody who has access to these books and see if their opinion is the same as ours. Signing off until next time.
Hi, Robert Hazelrick here with another speedy review. Before I get started today, I have a little bit of house cleaning to do. I'd like to tell you that the GorillaPod that I had done a review for a few weeks ago has a new big brother. It's the GorillaPod for SLR. I also wanted to let you know that Micromat has released an update to Tooltech Pro. It is only a .com update, so it's 4.5 now. It was, I believe, 4.2 prior to this update. But the good thing about this new version is it now works on your Intel Macs. I have been a Tooltech fan for quite some time. It's a great software app for diagnosing your hardware. It does a whole lot more than just check your hard drive. It also diagnose your cache, your I/O ports, even your processor and your video RAM. The new version seems to be a little bit more peppy than the older version, but you'll learn more about that coming up soon when John Nemo does his full review of the product. Okay, so what are we going to review today? The Ear Buddy. The Ear Buddy is manufactured by a company called Send Station, and what the Ear Buddy is a little carrying case for your headphones or your earbuds. I don't know about you, but I'm always throwing my iPod into my backpack or my laptop case, and my headphones always get tangled. But with the Ear Buddy, you put the earbuds in the center, and you just wind your cord around the outside, zip it up, and you're ready to go. It has a handy key ring, and it seems pretty durable. It retails for $15, and if you head on over to sendstation.com, you definitely want to go check out their store, because depending on what product you buy, you could get up to 40 or 50 iTunes songs for free. Some of the deals that they offer, you only have to spend $22 and you get 40 songs. So you're actually making money on the deal. So that's it for me this week. My email address is robert@mymac.com. If you need to get in touch with me, or if you'd like me to review a product, please head on over to mymac.com for all the links that you heard in my review. As always, I thank you for listening. This has been Robert Hazelrig with a speedy review.
Good evening. This is Not Mac News. I'm your host, Guy Searle, who also doubles as the poster child for contraception. Send your thoughts, comments, threats, lawsuits, and old Scientology pamphlets to notmacnews@gmail.com. Dateline, Purchase, New York. PepsiCo has decided to jump on the iTunes song giveaway bandwagon once again with a special promotion for its off-yellow, cloudy soft drink known as Mountain Dew. The promotion is slated to begin soon and has also brought on board rapper Tone Loc, who at the start of the commercials for the promotion will simply state, "Let's do it." To keep the costs of the promotion down, PepsiCo will not offer the entire iTunes library. Instead, the choices available will be the best songs as performed by Josie and the Pussycats, the Banana Splits, the Archies, and for the first time anywhere in a digital format, the greatest performances by whatever the name of the group was that played during Scooby-Doo cartoons. Besides giving away songs on iTunes, PepsiCo will also have cash prizes for anyone that can find the secret word listed in the notes for every sixth song, one per can of Mountain Dew, that is downloaded at the specially created sites on iTunes. Clues for the secret word can only be found on the inside bottom of each of the six cans acquired and must be entered within an hour after purchase. PepsiCo is confident that very few people will qualify for the cash prizes, since drinking six cans of the highly caffeinated soft drink will render most people incapable of using the iPod scroll wheel, as well as most other mechanical devices with any amount of accuracy. Not Mac News, bringing pain to comedy writers everywhere. I'm Guy Searle, and I wish you a good night.
My Mac Mini Podcast number 4 has been sponsored by Small Dog Electronics. Check them out at smalldog.com, as well as Innotech, INNO-TECH.com. That is our hosting provider for the MyMac website and our podcast. So every time you download a podcast, you're actually downloading it from the Innotech servers. My name is Tim Robertson. I'm the publisher and owner of MyMac.com, and I also host the other MyMac.com podcast with Chad Perry. Hey, did you guys check out macOS 10.4.8? It was released the end of last week. It's got something really cool in it that I really, really like. And I'm kind of surprised that Apple didn't save this one for the next version of the macOS 10.5. But with 10.4.8, they have Zoom using scroll wheel. It's really cool. If you have a scroll wheel on your mouse, say if you have a Mighty Mouse, for instance, or if you have one of the PowerBooks or MacBook Pros that actually let you scroll with two fingers, if you hold down the control key, you can actually zoom up and back any window on your computer, including the desktop. It's really, really cool. Like I said, I'm surprised that they waited. I'm surprised they didn't wait to put this in 10.5. It's, you know, it's just little touches like this that when you see it in action, it really makes you appreciate being a Mac user. These are neat new features that Apple just throws in an update, and it's pretty cool. So if you haven't already, take a look at macOS 10.4.8. I haven't seen too many reports that it's eating people's systems or anything like that. And in fact, Apple released a whole bunch of updates this last week for iPhoto, iMovie, all kinds of stuff, really. iWeb. But 10.4.8, I think, is the big one. And definitely worth the download. It, you know, it's a little bit bigger of a download if you're on an Intel Mac than a PowerPC Mac. I've got both. And I noticed it was significantly larger for the Intel Mac than the PowerPC Mac. I wonder why that is. I want to thank a lot of the people who have sent in their suggestions about cleaning LCD screens that I posted on a mini podcast last time. We skipped a week on the mini podcast because of the whole My Mac podcast number 100 coming out. Quite honestly, the night that I usually edit the mini podcast, I was still editing show 100. So not that editing the show and getting it up live isn't as important to me. I just really only have so many hours in the day. So and that was kind of a special event. So I just kind of put my emphasis there and my attention went to there. And hopefully we won't miss any more mini podcasts. I really like these. I think they're fun. I do wish Chad was here to do the intro and, as he calls it, the outro for the mini podcast. It just makes it easier when I have Chad to talk to. He keeps me focused. When it's just me sitting in front of my computer all by myself, man, it's just not as much fun, and I think I'm pretty boring. Then again, what can you really say when you're all by yourself, when you don't script it out, unlike everybody else who does the segments here on the mini podcast? Theirs are all scripted out. They know exactly what they're going to say. I have no idea. I just kind of let it go. You know what I mean? Just let it rip and see what comes out. So we're going to be recording our 102nd show this Wednesday. Make sure you download that. Well, don't make sure, but, you know, I hope you do, because if you downloaded this, then you're probably subscribed to us in iTunes. The majority of our subscribers, I've noticed, are subscribed via iTunes. And really, I think it's the most elegant solution for subscribing to podcasts. That's what I use, and I do listen to quite a few podcasts myself. Check out the MyMac.com website right now. We've got some really cool content. Roger Bourne, and I hope he does this more regularly, he posted cool MyMac links of the week. It's really neat. He's got a lot of neat stuff in there, and I'm hoping that he does that more often. That's all family-friendly web links. We're not linking to anything inappropriate on YouTube or, you know, that sort of stuff. Donnie Yankolo reports about the new Columbia, Maryland Apple Store. He made a trip up to Columbia, Maryland. By the time you listened to this, it was Saturday that he went up there, and he checked out some of the new Apple stuff. That's always, I love reading these trips that people make to the Apple Store. Hopefully he got a chance to play with the new 24-inch iMac. I did in the Grand Rapids, Michigan store the day before we recorded the 100th podcast, and boy, that is just a nice machine, I tell you what. Bakari's got two book reviews up right now called Beyond Snapshots, and he looks at two digital photography books. Bakari's big into photography, and of course, books are a good way to learn more about your craft. Donnie Yankolo's Maxpiration number 54, More Tech Terms, talks about all these crazy tech terms that everybody seems to have to know nowadays, but you don't always have a chance to learn what they mean. And if you're going to talk to your grandma, how do you explain some of the stuff, some of these terms to her? I mean, it's not always the easiest thing. We've got a lot of stuff up there. By the way, that sound you hear, that's the scroll wheel on my mouse. It's kind of annoying. But, you know, I've been using the same Logitech mouse for years now. It's a mouse, man. Optical dual sensor. Let's see. It is the M-BL63B. It's got a thumb button. It's got a scroll wheel, which is also a button, and then a left and a right button. I really like it. It's always been my favorite mouse since I first used it. And I haven't used an Apple mouse for my home system in a long, 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 long time. So anytime I get a new mouse or a new computer, the mouse that comes with it is usually regulated to a drawer, or it takes the place of an older Apple mouse that I use with either the Mini or the G4. They get confusing every now and then, you know, G this, G that. Gee. Anyways, what mouse do you guys use? Do you have a mouse that you like better than the Apple mouse? Do you like that new Apple Mighty Mouse? I haven't really played with it too much, just at the Apple store, and honestly, I wasn't all that impressed with it. It didn't strike me as a really, I don't know, it just, I looked at it, and I used it, and I thought, you know what, I like this Logitech mouse even better. It's, I just been using the mouse man for so long that the contours of it just really fit my hand well. What about you? What kind of mouse do you use? Is there one that you recommend more than the other? If so, let me know. Send an email to tim@mymac.com. I'd love to know what kind of mice you use. Better yet, simply pick up a telephone and leave a message. Worldwide, we don't care where you are. If your English skills aren't that good, that's fine. You know, this is not an American show or an English show. This is a show that goes all over the globe, and there are no borders here. We're all Mac users. Simply pick up the telephone and call 1-801-938-5559, or just go up to our website and you'll see the phone number listed there with the show notes. And leave a message. Let me know what mouse you use. Which ones do you recommend? Which ones don't you recommend? You know, telling someone, oh, this is a really cool mouse and this is the one you should use is, is helpful. But sometimes it's almost more helpful to find out which ones to avoid. Don't use such and such mouse at any cost. It's horrible. You'll hate it. macOS doesn't fully take advantage of the features, or, you know, it's just horrible to use. It skips all over my screen. I can't seem to get it to stop right where I want, or, you know, everybody's had a bad mouse experience. And so, you know, if you've come across mice that you should not use, let us know that too. And, you know, I'm not talking about the original square Apple mice. I think everybody agrees that those are horrible. They've perfected the technology greatly since then. So this is the end of the My Mac Mini podcast number 9. Again, thanks to all the guys who sent in the submissions and contributed to the show. David Cohen. I was thinking Fenestration there. David Cohen with his Fenestration series. I can't believe he's already recorded 9 of those. That's awesome. The 9th No Snooze Reviews from John Nemo. Speedy Reviews, of course, from Robert Hazelrig? How do you pronounce that, Robert? I'm not sure. You tell me. And, of course, Not Mac News with Guy Searle. I'm already starting to get used to Not Mac News with Guy Searle. For a long time, it was with Chris Siebold, but Guy's taken over the Not Mac News, and so far, I think it's fantastic, so... Welcome back, Not Mac News, and thanks for taking over the concept and running with that, Guy. We really appreciate it. Looking forward to some hilarious fake Apple headlines in the future. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.